What the EFL? It's the increasingly not-so-new Independent Football League podcast, where once a week we get together to discuss all the big news in the world of the EFL. Today, warning at Derby, warning for the rest of the League One promotion hopefuls. Crypto's Crawley sidemen caper gets the side eye. We look back on the best of the weekend's action and ahead to the return of the Championship. Another EFL legend takes the fit and proper guest test, and we scout some more up-and-coming stars. This is What the EFL. Here we are then, listener, rolling on again with our new podcast. It's me, Matt Davis Adams, at the wheel, joined as ever by Sam Parkin. Morning, Sam.
Morning, Matt. How are you?
All right, thanks. I made my first error, though, because it's afternoon when we're recording. But hey, it's Monday. Adrian Clark's back with us too. You okay, Clarky?
Hello. Yeah, all good. I was going to pull you up on that. So, yeah, well played.
Give us a follow, if you'd be so kind, please, listener, at EFL What The on Twitter. If you want to sponsor the pod, then you can email whattheefl@yahoo.com. Rate, subscribe, like, share, all that good stuff. It really helps us out and helps other Football League fans find the pod too. Okay, a weekend off for the Championship, but not for us. We'll kick off with the news. So, late last week, Derby appointed Paul Warne as head coach. He leaves his position as Rotherham boss, having taken them back up to the Championship once again. Firstly, Sam, was this a bit harsh on Liam Rossini? He only got the 9 games in charge.
Yeah, I think so. That said, I've been kind of looking at the style of football and obviously the results. They've been a little bit short of goals. That's been obvious for the amount of possession they've been having and the calibre of player they've brought in. So I think it would have taken a bit of time. I think Liam Rossini's project, if I'm allowed to get away with that horrible term, would have probably taken a season or two. I think that's the honest truth, to get everyone playing that style. And Derby wanted it now, don't they? They want the instant success. And Paul Warne in League One pretty much guarantees that. So right man, wrong time, maybe for Liam Rossini. He'll come again. You know, everyone thinks very highly of him as a coach. He was a brilliant pundit. And the football, you know, even when he was alongside Wayne Rooney and I got to Pride Park last season, I was really impressed. It's just not a quick fix when you're trying to play such intricate patterns and rotations and all that. It's maybe not going to work straight away at League One level. So Paul Warne is a bit more of a sure thing.
Yeah, I do agree. I do agree. It just feels harsh. I mean, the last game that he managed, they beat Wickham. They had 26 shots. I think his subs helped to change the game in their favour, where they came back from a goal behind. They've beaten Peterborough at home. They've beaten Barnsley at home. Two very, very good sides at this level. I think it would have come good, but I also agree with Sam that the style of football that he was implementing was a slow burner. And yeah, I don't think it was going to take too long maybe for Derby's owners to sit there and wait for it to become an automatic promotion team. I think they would have won some, lost some along the way this season. But yeah, I feel a bit sorry for him, but I think there is a good coach in there and a possible future manager as well.
From Warne's perspective then, Sam, what's his motivation here? Obviously, I'm sure he's getting a nice pay rise and you know, that's absolutely fine. That's part of the reason why we all go to work, isn't it? But is he looking at it thinking, right, Rotherham are 8th in the Championship after 9 games. We're probably not going to stay there. And he's probably achieved all that he can do at that club. And there's a higher ceiling for him at Derby than there is with the Millers.
Definitely. Yeah. And if you think back to the back end of last season, when the results went a little bit awry, the fans were questioning as to whether Paul Warne's tenure at the club had run its course. And remarkably, they were able to turn around that slide. I mean, they couldn't win for love nor money. They couldn't score, won the Football League trophy, got enough points to get the automatic promotion brilliantly. But I think Paul Warne probably saw at that point that nothing's forever. And when you're hot, when you're getting the speculation and getting linked, you have to move on. You have to move on as a player and you have to move on as a manager as well. So, yeah, certain a sense of inevitability, I think, when his name was getting mentioned again this season. And, you know, it's going to be fascinating because we've already touched on Derby's style of play this year. You know, Paul Warne has been very, very different from that. There's a big contrast, you know, very good at set pieces. He's loved the big man previously in his teams, going, you know, back to front, normally being a kind of 3-5-2 man. So it's going to be a big change for the Derby players. That said, there's been a couple of little alterations. I don't know if Clarkey agrees with me here, but he's played two little guys up top for Rotherham this year. They've still had the set-piece threat. He's played more possession. They're not down the bottom of the possession stats in the Championship. And they've had a bit more of a ball-playing kind of centre-half in Cameron Humphreys in the team. So maybe this has been a slightly new Paul Warne, and this move comes at a good time for him, considering he maybe is evolving as a manager as well.
Big risk for him though, isn't it, Adrian? I mean, if it doesn't go right for him here, he's kind of back where he started, but you've got to take the plunge at some point.
I don't see it as too much of a risk. He achieved everything he could achieve at Rotherham, really. What was going to happen? Not going to go to the Premier League. I know that Bournemouth did it, a similar sized club, but it was highly unlikely that they could take that next step. So, you know, the possibility of maybe going down again and coming back up again, there's only so many times you can go and do that, isn't there, as Rotherham manager? And Sam has hit the nail on the head. I think that spell where the fans were doubting him last season will have pricked his ears. It really, really, really would. He'd have been like, oh, hang on a minute. Okay, right. They could actually get rid of me here any time, despite what's happened in the past. So it's a good opportunity, isn't it? Derby County is a big football club. It's primed to get promoted back to the Championship. And it's an opportunity for him, I think, to show that he's got more strings to his bow. Will he change? Will he go with the Rotherham style of football at Derby County, or will he work with what he's got and say, okay, I've got better technical players here, I can coach a different way as well, adding in the strengths, particularly around set pieces, that he's so famous for? So I think it's a really good opportunity for him to enhance his reputation as a manager. If it doesn't work out, he'll 100% get employment elsewhere if he wants it.
Just quickly, Matt, you wrote it on the plan. They lost Michael Smith and Ahikwe. We do a plan, listeners, for this podcast. They lost Smith and Ahikwe last year. If that doesn't sum up probably where Paul Warne was, then nothing will. Two of his best players leaving a Championship outfit to go to a League One club. Yes, yeah. A massive League One club, but that shows you the type of resources, type of budget he would have been playing with and working wonders.
We can do this now that we're not affiliated to a big media outlet, but I would urge any Derby County supporter to check out the Moment of Truth series of podcasts from the BBC. If you want to learn a bit more about your manager, they mic'd up Paul Warne and Carl Robinson at the end of last season. It's absolutely fascinating stuff.
On that, by the way, one of my best mates played, where was it he played? He played in non-league where Paul Warne played. I can't remember the team. And he wrote to him on the back of that documentary, the audio documentary. He wrote to the club and said, look, I've really, really enjoyed it. And he made a couple of, he pulled out a couple of names that he'd mentioned in the documentary, former managers, and told one or two little stories to Paul Warne. And he got a brilliant reply. He wrote back to him and said, oh, thanks for your message, mate. And you know, went above and beyond in terms of having one or two tales about this same guy. So he's a top man, isn't he, Paul Warne? Really, really like him.
Yeah, I can't quite bring myself to say best of luck, but yeah, hope it goes okay for him. Also, in the East Midlands, Mansfield Town have become the first EFL side to move a kickoff time to try and save a few quid on their energy bills. The Stags League 2 game against Walsall on the 15th of October will now kick off at 1 p.m. instead of 3. The club said the earlier kickoff will help us see whether significant savings can be made on floodlight usage and other energy costs. Following the trial of this change in kickoff time, the club will be better able to determine whether an earlier kickoff on Saturday would have an effect on prospective attendances. Sam, as players, is there a massive difference in kicking off at 1 instead of 3? Does it mean that you're shoveling down pasta at 8 o'clock in the morning as your pre-match meal? I can't think of many other drawbacks.
Yeah, you are. It wasn't particularly pleasant. I think we're all creatures of habit, aren't we, a little bit? So I didn't love them. I think the games are particularly flat more often than not. Now that I've turned my hand to covering games, you don't really get great 12:30 kickoffs, 12 p.m. kickoffs. But no, I think that towards the tail end of my career, waking up on a match day, I just wanted to get out there. I hated the hour and a half before a game. You know, being in the dressing room, I used to get so irritated by my teammates. I found it so mundane, you know, having that hour and a half to sit and read the program and stew over what was going to happen. So for me, I'd like to just be out there and get it done. So I'm not sure it will have much of an impact on the players. The supporters, on the other hand, it's not ideal. If you've purchased a season ticket to go to 20 odd games at 3 o'clock and all of a sudden across the board, the kickoff times are going to be changed. That's not a great look, I don't think, for the clubs. And I think the muddy's watered a little bit here from Mansfield because their prior home game's been changed to a Friday night. So there's not too much joined up thinking going on here. Andy Holt and a few of the other chief exec chairmen have said that the cost of overnight stays is going to mean that this isn't going to make a save in anyway. So I don't see it happening. It sounds like this is a trial from Mansfield and we'll probably have more clarity in the days after when they know what type of dough they've taken.
The impact on the away team is the big thing, isn't it, Clarky? Not just the team, but the supporters. You know, if you're having to get up at 5 in the morning to do an away trip rather than 8 in the morning, that's going to change your mind as to whether you want to go in the first place.
Yeah, some trains won't run that early in the day either, will they? I think fans won't have an issue getting up. It's just, will they be able to get to the game in the same way that they'd planned initially? So it is, yeah, it's not ideal. I mean, there are plus sides. You get back earlier, back in time to go to the pub at a reasonable hour, don't you? And you know, I know that would have suited plenty of my former teammates on when we went on away trips. When we got back, as pubs were closing, they'd be delighted. So, but no, I get it. I get why you want to try it because of the costs, and it makes sense in this current climate. But it is a bit unfair on the away team, like you said. Those that travel on the day, probably that might be the game changer, where we can't travel on the day now. We have to book a hotel. So it is a bit harsh on them. Personally, as a footballer, I was the same as Sam. Just wanted to get out there. I wanted to get it done. But I also like playing under the lights. And I liked coming out for the second half when it was suddenly pitch black and everything looked a little bit different to how you started the afternoon. That's part of the charm of it, really. So yeah, as a player, I would prefer three.
Elsewhere in, oh no, surely not news, Crawley Town, they of the crypto bro owners were doing their own scouting report at Sunday's charity kickabout between social media stars, some of whom are apparently known as the Sidemen. Oh God, I feel old. Anyway, they raised more than £1 million from the game, so great for them to do that. But Crawley chairman Preston Johnson plans to sign up some of these players for the FA Cup. He said, "We're excited about partnering with the Sidemen and the opportunity to scout their charity match to potentially identify a couple of quality footballers who can join the club ahead of our first FA Cup match." Sam, when I first heard of this, I thought, what a load of nonsense this is. But then I remembered it's Crawley and they signed the only way as Essex's Mark Wright last season. So is there a massive difference between these things?
Not hugely, although if we're looking at that, you know, individual, Mark Wright at least had a background in non-league football. And I think came through at Tottenham, didn't he? So he had clearly had ability at one stage, probably not when he had his 7-year hiatus in Marbella. But yeah, I mean, this is, I think I said it on the previous podcast, I'm all for the game moving on and finding different revenue streams and such, like, you know, with your kits and various other bits and bobs that have gone on at Crawley. But I draw the line at this.
It's an embarrassment, Sam.
I draw the line at this. Yeah, I mean, For the players that are around the first team squad there, to see this happen and potentially have the opportunity to step off the bench, even if it's for 1 minute in an FA Cup game, things like that may only happen to young players. Professionals might only play in the FA Cup a few times. I scored one goal in the FA Cup. It's one of my best ever memories. And I've said the tale before, but I got in the car after the game and I said to my mum, if this is it, at least I've achieved my dream. So I felt sorry for the Crawley player. He was probably the 19th man last season. If this happens again, my sentiment will be exactly the same. It's not on.
What about Kevin Betsy, Clarky? Do you think he's having to bite his tongue here or is he on board with this?
He'll have to totally be biting his tongue, won't he? I mean, he's on sort of a sticky wicket with the results. They're not going to plan. So he's not in a position of strength where he can fight against it, is he? He can't say, no, we're absolutely not doing this, because truth be told, he's probably on the edge, isn't he? Results are pretty poor. So he won't be happy. And yeah, there's not much to add to what Sam said other than it brings the name of Crawley Football Club, you know, down. It turns them into the dog and duck, doesn't it? You know, they're not a pub team. They're a proper professional team. And you can't have YouTubers coming in to just take up a position on the bench that a promising young player has been dreaming about, that opportunity. It's just wrong. Just in the name of bringing a few extra fans there. And those fans, will they stick around at Crawley once those YouTubers are gone? No chance. It's a pipe dream. Yeah, as I said to Sam, it's embarrassing.
We'll keep an eye on it as the weeks go on. I have a feeling this might fizzle out and end up not happening, but we'll see. Also in the news, and this is going to be news to Adrian because he doesn't know it yet, but Sam's just sent me the message. Here's a tweet from Watford FC. It says, EFL advert, it's great to welcome SNC Kicks to our family and as part of our eBay UK's campaign to champion over 300,000 UK small businesses. Hashtag Small Businesses United. Here's a more pertinent tweet from the Daily Telegraph's Jason Burt. Exclusive, Watford sack Rob Edwards as head coach and will appoint Slaven Bilic. Let's get your live reaction to that, Clarky.
Oh, Watford being Watford. Watford being Watford. There'll always be Watford under this ownership. Just give the guy a chance. Seriously. They recruited him for a reason because, yeah, he's a progressive young coach with the ability to produce good winning football, in my opinion, but he's not had a crack at it, has it? We're not even out of September. I don't know whether he was able to sign the players he wanted to sign in the summer, whether they were just thrust upon him. Yeah, very difficult. It was always going to be a very difficult job for him. It's always going to be a huge risk. But yeah, I just don't think they've been bad enough to make that change personally at this stage. I don't know what Sam thinks.
I don't really have any words, to be honest. I don't know. Who's appointed him? Shouldn't he be under fire? Whoever's appointed Rob Edwards, because clearly this is not someone that was going to come in and have an immediate impact, I don't think, with this group of players. The recruitment point's an interesting one, Clarkie, because I'm sure he'd have had his own ideas of which probably championship players he could have got in to improve their squad and get more immediate results. So for once, it's probably not the players that have done for a manager at Watford.
Yeah.
But I just don't understand it. Don't understand it, because this is a bit of a change in thinking, it felt like, and maybe a bit more long-term strategy. And to sack him at this point is terrible, but he'll be fine. It was a no-brainer in moving, you know, the type of money he would have gone from to, and he'll get a very good League One job, I would suggest. Probably a League One club with a chance of getting in the Championship. That's the type of level I think he'll be looking at now.
Yeah, no damage to his CV, Matt. Here, this is on Watford. This one on Slav. I like Slaven Bilic. I do, but
he's a short-term manager as well, isn't he? So he kind of fits the Watford model.
Yeah, he's always worked for sort of higher and firing clubs, hasn't he? Really. So yeah, no, he'll be okay. But yeah, Watford need to maybe have a look at themselves and what they're playing at, really.
All right, there was no Championship action this weekend, but plenty in Leagues One and Two to discuss. We'll look back on the best of the weekend's action next. And let's start then with the new leaders in League One. Schumacher's found the formula to make Plymouth number one in the division. The Pilgrims came from behind to beat Ipswich at Home Park in a proper ding-dong on Sunday. What a game this was, Sam.
Oh, you're going to be the first to say what an advert for League One.
Hey, Sam, this kicked off just after midday. You do get good games.
Oh, midday. Yeah. Forgot about that. Oh, it was brilliant. It was, I mean, two very talented young coaches going at it, and they delivered. Plymouth play some lovely intricate stuff around the final third. I felt Ipswich probably should have been further in ahead, and if I'm going to be critical at all about Kieran McKenna this season, I'll go for it now. I don't think you take Ladapo off. He's been struggling for goals, gets a goal at his old club, and I just thought those changes were a little bit peculiar when they came. It meant a reshuffle, Jackson going up top. Kane Vincent-Young came on the right-hand side. I thought Jackson was a live wire down the right. I think he's playing his best football there rather than at centre-forward. And I felt, again, Schumacher got his changes spot on. He had a little bit more width with his front three. Whittaker on the right. Ennis, who's a centre-forward, obviously started the game as a centre-forward. He ended up on the left. So I thought that counteracted what Ipswich were trying to do. And then obviously you're forward in there as well in Sam Cosgrove. So had to chase the game, Plymouth, because they were a goal down, and Ipswich were the better side start of the second half. But what a turnaround. What a season Whittaker's having. He is fantastic right now. Six attempts in the game, I think, was the joint most. He's got four goals, two assists so far this season. Looking the part, absolutely. And fast forward to the last minute. I mean, very few things, I think, in football surprise me or get a yelp out of me, but seeing a goalkeeper stagger up Christian Walton and getting the most wonderful header on a corner and seeing that save, it was kind of clawed out, wasn't it, from Cooper underneath the crossbar. It's just amazing because so few sports are like that. I mean, we're going to be talking about Ipswich, you know, having a bit of a wobble probably today. That could have just swung, you know, everything in their favour there, and they'd have been feeling really good about things today. So it was a brilliant moment, perfect end to what was a great clash between two sides. And if there's one concern for Ipswich, they can't be on the telly again. They've got 3 wins in 36 on the TV, thanks to my friends Andy and Stuart at the East Anglian Daily Times for that one. And top six record. This is the one thing that's going to hold them back, right, Clarkey? Top six record, last three seasons, played 35, won 6,
yeah,
and failed to beat 4 of the top six already this season. So are we talking about Ipswich as being promotion, automatic promotion contenders, or are they going to have to stick for the playoffs again?
Yeah. Be stuck flat in track playoffs. Bullies. That's what that stat tells you. They're flat track bullies, doesn't it? To a certain degree, a little bit like Arsenal. You got to go and beat your main rivals, haven't you, to achieve your goals really at the top end of the table. And I think Ipswich will have to find a way to do that. I think you touched on something there with the changes that McKenna made. There is a part of him that I think maybe overthinks matches tactically in game. I think he's incredibly bright, so intelligent, and clearly an outstanding coach. But a little bit like Pep Guardiola, sometimes he can see things maybe that other people can't see and feels the need to act upon them. Well, maybe just sitting tight and keeping things simpler will work out better. But he's a young coach and he's going to make mistakes on the job. I'll turn it back to Arsenal again. Mikel Arteta was making a lot of mistakes on the job, but he sort of gained more experience now, and those errors are fewer, more far between. I think that will happen with McKenna. He's very, very promising. But yeah, maybe he's a bit too much in his own head at times.
Yeah, first L of the season for Ipswich. They were one of only two unbeaten teams in League One. They will now face the only side yet to lose in the division on Saturday. They take on Portsmouth. That's going to be one to watch, I'm sure. Shout out to Barley Mumba, by the way, who scored here. Definitely the EFL player whose name most sounds like a dance, but also a decent footballer as well. Now then, Gareth Ainsworth's 10th anniversary as Wickham boss didn't go to plan. The celebratory champagne quickly went flat as they got stuffed by the Owls at Hillsborough. 3-1 to Sheffield Wednesday, the final score here. Adrian, you were there and you saw 2 goals in the opening 10 minutes.
I did. It was a good game. An incredible first half. And I was really, really impressed with Sheffield Wednesday. I'd been there on the Tuesday in the Papa John's Trophy. It was all glamour, let me tell you. 4,500 inside Hillsborough when they lost to Burton. But this was good. 22,000 there, and they were richly entertained. Got to say, the front three with Smith at the sort of spearhead of their attack, Michael Smith, and Gregory alongside him with Josh Windass in behind. They were brilliant, absolutely outstanding. Windass, so full of running, he's everywhere. And Wickham didn't really have an answer to him. They play just two central midfielders, Lewis Wing and Dominic Gape. Gape's small, Wing's more of an attacking midfielder. They just didn't have the presence inside the middle of that engine room to cope when Gregory or Windass dropped into those little pockets, and they were getting overrun time and time again. And they changed it second half. Ainsworth had to. But yeah, it was those three were the standouts. I thought the wing backs were terrific. Liam Palmer down the right, Marvin Johnson, who whipped a great cross in the first minute for Joe Jacobson's own goal. He was really good. And then there's Bannon as well. So yeah, lots and lots of really, really positive aspects to Sheffield Wednesday's play. I don't know if they're good enough at the back. I don't know if they're strong enough without the ball to go top two this season, the Owls, but they will score a lot of goals. And if you give them space, they will hurt you. So, interesting times ahead, I think, for Sheffield Wednesday supporters. As for Wickham, it was a pretty poor performance. There was an unbelievable assist from Anis Mehmeti, but I'm going to save that. I'm going to talk about him in a little bit more detail later. But yeah, it was not a happy 10th anniversary for Gareth Ainsworth. They look very limited
Sam, here's a bonus tweet of the week from you, from our old pal Joe Jacobson, who put through his own net here. He says, not how we wanted to celebrate the Gaffer and club's anniversary yesterday. Wasn't ideal scoring my first career OG, fuming face emoji. Still loads of time to put things right and get to where we want to be at WWFC official. All right, isn't it? Pretty standard. I mean, tagging the club in at the end's a bit rogue, but other than that, it's a textbook 7 out of 10 footballer's tweet, I think.
They get a little bit of a pass, don't they, Wickham? Because we know that that spirit, you know, it's not cliched, it's not made up. You know, they have something wonderful going on there. And Joe is obviously a wonderful pundit when he comes on our podcast as well. So no problem at all. Do what you want, you chair boys.
Into League Two, Sutton offered half-price entry to season ticket holders of Premier League or EFL clubs not in action this weekend. Sutton were the only London-based side who played at home. That resulted in their highest attendance of the season. The vast majority of the 3,404, and it was the vast majority, given Salford bought 116 with them, left disappointed after late drama at Gander Green Lane. Sending off felt like the turning point here, Clarkey. It's easy to poke fun at Salford, and it's something that we've done over the last year or so for the way they changed managers and the way they've come into the league, etc. But this might be their season. They look maybe like the real deal, and they love a late goal, which is never a bad thing.
Never a bad thing. I think they're 5-0 up in the final 15 minutes of games this season, Salford. So yeah, they're strong finishers. And yeah, it fell on their lap, obviously, with the red card. It looked like Donovan Wilson had a kick and a shove at the player off the ball. And yeah, they had been the better team until that point, Sutton United. They'd acquitted themselves really well. But Salford have got a really good coach now, I think. And they've got midfielders as well that score goals. Matty Lund, obviously, has been doing it for a long, long time. But Watson as well, the two scorers in this game, they both love to break into the box and finish. And I think they are real assets to the team. I think Hendry up front looks a cracking signing, involved in both the goals. Obviously came down from St Johnstone in the summer. Looks a top player. But yeah, going back to Neil Wood, I think there were question marks because he'd never managed in the EFL before. But the transformation in style and the distinctiveness of the way they play football now is there for all to see. And I think he's got his messages over very quickly and very, very effectively. They've barely faced any sides in the bottom half. So I think they're in a really good position to kick on. Statistically, they've had the most shots in open play, 8 more than anyone else. They've only conceded 3 goals in open play, which is the second best as well. So they're pretty solid. And this is the one that really stands out. They've made 120 sequences of 10 or more passes. That's 37 more than those in second place, which are Leyton Orient. So they can knock the ball around for fun. And you'll like this one. They make 83 more short passes per 90 than Bradford, who are second. And for context, they've made 479 passes per game so far this season. That's 2 more than Arsenal. And it's over 100 more than Manchester United average in the Premier League. So they can knock the ball around for fun. And they weren't doing this 12 months ago. So Neil Wood deserves an awful lot of credit.
You mentioned Leyton Orient there. Sam, they were 2-0 victors at Barrow. Good result against another team who started well. You know Richie Wellens pretty well. He's turned Orient round. Tell us a bit about his approach.
He likes fast attacking football.
Yeah,
he's not obsessed with possession. The stats will be up there. I think they're fifth or sixth in that regard, but doesn't mind soaking up a little bit of pressure and playing on the counter-attack. And I think that was, you know, it has been in evidence with the performances so far this season. I think they've scored a couple of counter-attacking goals. What they've added maybe this year, obviously the defensive solidity is ridiculous right now. 7 clean sheets. That was the 6th win in a row at Barrow. But Nous, professionalism, running the clock down, that was all really in evidence at the weekend. I've seen quite a lot of mutual respect between the two sets of supporters. But, you know, a lot of chatter about that, really, how professional this performance was. So I think Richie will be delighted at the way they're defending. He'll still feel there's more to come from the forward players, I'm sure. But the first half an hour, they were really up against it. Didn't have an attempt until Paul Smith scored the opening goal. They were absolutely camped in. Barrow's intensity in the early exchanges was incredible. I noted that they have the fourth most possessions won in the final third. So they're a very intensive, high press inside Barrow, anything but what they were under Ian Everett, where they were very possession-based, and subsequently under Phil Brown. I'm not sure if they were one or the other under Phil Brown, but this is a new team with Pete Wild's stamp on it. It really is. And yeah, for the couple of games they've lost recently, they still leave with a lot of credit. But yeah, this is a bit of a well-oiled machine, Leighton Orient right now. Hard game, had to work for it, controlled the second half, good experience throughout the side, some standouts, Dan Happy, brilliant. El Mazzuni and Jaden Sweeney, a fullback who's had three loans at non-league level last few campaigns. He did fantastically well at the weekend, so difficult to see. Who's going to stop Leighton Orient, really?
Right, that was the weekend review. Next today, another EFL Icon takes the fit and proper guest test. Taking the fit and proper guest test this week is the former Forest, Southampton, Leeds, Colchester, Sheffield Wednesday, Swindon and more midfielder turned Sky Sports anchor, David Prutton. David, first of all, are you happy being referred to as an anchor?
You will know this as well. I have been called fundamentally worse than that. It's good. It's obviously vague hints of Ron Burgundy, but he's one of my idols, so I don't mind that at all.
talk to us a little bit about how you made the move from punditry to presentation, because it's not a very well-trodden path, albeit it seems to be taking off a little bit more these days.
It does. Thanks to trailblazers like me. Christ. I was doing a lot of guesting type stuff on co-coms, things that everybody on here can relate to. And by virtue of probably circumstance in at Sky with regards to kind of gaps appearing, it'd been discussed very, very briefly, but then I got asked to do a checker trade game, which I must have said, because this first game that I did was a checker trade game, so I must have said the word checker trade about 1,000 times. And I remember Bayo was playing and I was giving him the full handle all the way through. Adebayo Akinfenwa, so I like woke up in the morning screaming like checker trade and Adebayo Akinfenwa, and it was mind numbing, to be fair. But I got a phone call off a very good producer friend of mine who said this game's coming up, and I kind of half misheard what he'd said, and he said, do you want to present it? And I thought it said about being a guest. So I was like, yeah, no worries. And he must have thought he's been incredibly blasé about this. yeah, no worries. He said, no, we want you to present it. So yeah, just took the kind of plunge, which if you've got any experience of working at Sky and Sky Sports, they're very ambitious, very motivated. And you say yes to most things that come your way within the organisation. So I said yes. And they were lovely with regards to feedback. When I say lovely, I mean they were good with feedback. Whether the feedback was lovely was a different thing. But with our collective footballing backgrounds, you don't mind being told what's good, bad, or indifferent, and hopefully working on the stuff that you can work on and getting rid of the stuff that they don't quite like. So it was a couple of games here and there by virtue of the way that people moved around. I mean, Simon Thomas was with us for a very long time, and he was wonderful to work with, Simon, but then came away, obviously, with regards to things that happened in his personal life, which he had a hell of a lot of stuff to deal with, of course, which then meant that as he'd gone to the Premier League, and I was working a lot with Kelly Cates at the time, she moved up to do the Premier League. And again, the timing of it was right. If it had been possibly early when I'd done less, maybe they'd have thought, we need someone to kind of bridge this gap. It was at the time when they said, we'll give you a go and see how you do, which I think if you get offered something like that, that's all you, I mean, you just say yes and you crack on, and then here we are just a few seasons later.
Rats, what were you like as a interviewee when you were playing? Was it something that you enjoyed dealing with the media, and had your mind already kind of been made up that was kind of the path for you?
I think by virtue of how long the answer was to Matt's first question, you'd probably realise that I didn't mind talking to people or giving you my opinion. I mean, I always really enjoyed it as a player, because obviously it was slightly different and we're all generationally pretty much in the same little pocket, aren't we? Where it was the local paper, it was local press, it was if there was a Sky game on, that was your chance to go and say a little bit if you were asked to. But obviously the different outlets now means that opinion can be cast forth from anywhere on anything. And with regards to the kind of post-playing stuff, Sam, I got to 32 and just had nowhere to play. Not people, oh, were you injured? No, I was fully fit, just unwanted.
Which I don't know, I know that feeling. Yeah.
You think, no, seriously, I'm really fit. we don't like it. Okay. So then that kind of off season went into the pre-season, and you are kind of looking around thinking, we need to get something sorted here. And again, timing, I'd worked a little bit with Peter Beagrie, who was wonderful for me at Sky, and I think it felt like there was a little bit of a gap where, because I was relatively young coming out of the game, I still knew a lot of people. And in the games that we were covering, Christ, I was never going to be, oh, we need someone for Super Sunday or anything like that at all. And with that punditry into presenting side of it, there is a ceiling, I think, with that. Maybe that's an old-fashioned way of looking at it from my point of view, but you want to be able to feel. And as you get to work more on different leagues and different countries, you get more comfortable in what your opinion is, and you soon realise that you can give and pass judgment on most football because of your background, but also what you put into it from a prep point of view and the development of your own opinion with it. So I'd enjoyed the bits and bobs that I'd done with Sky, but it wasn't right set with, which is, this is what, where we're going to go. And it, again, it was just very, very similar things to being, to as when you're starting out as a player. You mean, make sure you're good to work with, make sure you where you're meant to be, at what time you're meant to be there. Make sure you come prepped and forearmed, and don't be too much of a whopper to work with, and hopefully people allow you to do it for longer
you should hear what Sam said. Yeah, Sam said that. Yeah, he's been hammering you.
Expect nothing less.
Double whopper, he said, I think. Yeah, I'm a jaggedy. Two quick ones for me. Do you get more or less nervous broadcasting compared to playing? Because I don't really feel any nerves when I'm broadcasting, but with football, weirdly, the older I got, the more nervous I felt. I don't know if I was unusual on that. And the other one is, have you bumped into a pundit that you sort of had a bit of an awkward relationship on the pitch yet? Someone you had a spat with that you weren't quite sure how it was going to go?
With regards to the first one, and this is not said for any other reason, broadcasting, I always think that's what a Dimbleby does. That's what a Hugh Edwards does, isn't it? It was talking about football, I always think, is a bit different. But I understand, because you've got to put it on your job description somewhere. No nerves with that at all. I just love it. I absolutely love it. Whether we were in at Sky over the weekend, or whether we're at Hull City on Friday night, nothing about it is... It's just a total and utter thrill, and it's fun, and the people that we work with are great, and that's both in front and behind camera, and as you boys will attest to, the people that are in your ear, which, I mean, can be just as entertaining as the actual thing that you're doing if you're hearing it all kind of going off, whether it's technically, whether it's a clash of opinions in a gallery. I'm like, listen to the guest, but I'm like, oh, it's all kicking off in it. Just give us a second. Just listen to see who's saying what to him. Just because I'm nosy. And I know what you mean, Clarky, with regards to playing, because of how utterly overwhelming it felt to have to concentrate for that long to not be crap. It was like, this is it. This next 45 minutes till I can have a break at half time and I'll sit down and go again. That was all encompassing, wasn't it? So whether you call it nerves or just sheer laser guided focus, I probably don't know. And I think the point you make about getting older is because you can, that fearlessness that comes with being a kid and no expectations, it's very rare that you see, especially if you have the pleasure or the privilege of growing up at a football club and getting into that team, very rarely would that young player get booed. Very rarely would they get anything from the crowd. So as soon as you get older and cynical, it's always the older players.
And there's always someone to take your job as
exactly.
well.
Exactly. And which in turn means that's why we as older pros batter the younger lads, because they get away scot-free from all that type of stuff. It wasn't the only one that stuck out. So I've worked a lot with Simon Grayson doing media stuff. And Simon was my manager at Leeds. It just didn't fancy me as a player, which was fine. Christ, there's a list that you can join on that. But so when it came to actually sitting down, it was like we'd like never met before. Like we obviously knew each other, but it was almost like, let's box off the playing bit or the non-playing bit. Yeah. And we just got, and I get on with him really, really well. But to a man and a woman, whoever's been on has always been really, really nice. I mean, and the thing, my approach probably, and I don't know whether Sam will be able to kind of attest to this, is I, part of what my, I think my job is, obviously other than actually doing what's required on screen, is whoever comes in, whether it's their first game, the 10th game, they've been a regular, you've got to make them feel super welcome. And I probably go that far the other way. It was like nauseatingly nice. And you've got to be able to ask the pertinent questions as and when they arise. But I want whoever's coming in to think, I've had a great 2 hours, 3 hours sat there. We've talked about football. Some of it might have been serious regarding whatever you're talking about, or some of it might have been pretty frivolous. But that's, I do see that as part of the job. I'd hate for someone to come in and think, oh, that was a bit cold and a bit stuffy. And I didn't quite enjoy that, because as you, again, you three will, especially in what we're doing in and around games, because you've got, it seems like you've got such a long time, but because of commercials, because of features, because of the actual game itself, you've only got little portions here and there. So that person has to feel comfortable enough to be as succinct as possible in, I don't know, a 30, 40, 50 second answer. So they need to be able to feel comfortable. So I've always felt that's the way, as former pros. I think there's a weird comfort anyway, isn't there? You know, in some way, it's, I might not have played with anybody, not have played against them, but there is still kind of that kind of, well, we've done the same thing for a little bit, so you must be relatively similar. So there's that common ground, I think, that comes pretty quickly.
David, it was a couple of years ago that you and I sat down in a plush London hotel lobby where you were being put up by Sky to talk about Forest, and you were saying how brilliant it would be to see them back in the Premier League. Fast forward then, how much fun did you have being pitch side for the playoff final last season?
It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. And it was, to be able to see it, I mean, the narrative of the whole day was, in the broadest sense, was all about Forest, wasn't it? Take away the fact that Huddersfield had at least one Stonewall penalty and possibly two. Just a shame we didn't have VAR. Oh, of course we had VAR. We just didn't use it that day, didn't we? So put that slightly aside. But to see Des Walker was there, and obviously Des, part of a glorious Forest side, and then part of our slightly less glorious Forest side as younger players. So Marlon Harewood was there, David Johnson, of course. I mean, watching his son, who when he joined Forest was not even born, bizarre. But, and again, he's I've got so much time for David and his family. They've always been lovely, and Brennan's done fantastically well. I think that's an understatement, isn't it? But to see that was great. It was amazing, really. And when we had Steve Cooper, so we had, there was me, there was Joby, there was the Hef, who's just wonderful, bizarre, bonkers company, in what I think was a silk suit, which, I mean, far be it from me to tell a 6.5 foot fella like that not to wear that. And then we had Stuart Pearce as well. So I'm basically just sat chewing Stuart Pearce's ear off during the course of the game. And then Steve Cooper comes over. And again, another great story, how wonderfully well Steve's done there with the players that he's done. Obviously, we're seeing the brutal nature of what the Premier League's all about at this moment in time, aren't we? But he's a cracking coach. And then he's talking to us, because I know Steve relatively well. He's got it. So I'm obviously blowing as much up his backside as whatever. And he's talking about what it means to the fans. And he's, oh, well, you'll know as well. And I'm thinking, I'm sat next to Stuart Pearce. And he's, bless him, he's referencing both of us. But I'm kind of thinking, this is aimed more towards Psycho than it is to me about what it means to people. And it was just great. And across the board, I think everyone that day as well, especially where you kind of by the tunnel, looking back at the fans. And they were there for, so we must have come off about 45 minutes, an hour afterwards. And it was only really then that they were getting ushered out. And it was loud. It was a show of supporting might by one of, I think, the great institutions of British football. And 23 years. Fingers crossed, it's not 23 years and a short-lived one. But I've got full faith will work out what the kind of Premier League conundrum is, because it's a tough task, isn't it?
Yeah, amazing day. I'll never forget it. Right, before we let you go, we always finish with a super tough question. Here's yours, David. You're big into your music. I know you're an Arctic Monkeys fan.
Yes.
What do you make of their Better Be a Mirror Ball? And are you on board with this descent into croonerism from Alex Turner that we saw start with Tranquility Base Hotel and Casino? It looks set to continue.
Does descent suggest...
It's a bit of a loaded term, isn't it?
Yeah, is it suggestive of a bad thing? Because descent, I mean, unless you're coming down a massive mountain, descent sounds like it's a finger pointing in an an accusing tone. I think, do you know what? And again, I'll give you another elongated answer to this. I heard the new one. I love Tranquility Base. I then listened to the first album, which is stunning considering it's done by teenagers from South Yorkshire. That voice that he's got, the lyrics that he uses, that vibe that he puts out there is something that I absolutely love. And I love the evolution of them. They're properly one of our generation's great, great bands. And the fact that they're from Yorkshire, I absolutely adore as well. And the only thing with regards to this kind of crooneristic type bit is it's not even a secret weapon. The absolute beating heart of that band is Matt Helders on drums, isn't it? And it's almost like, come on, give him something to really get his teeth and his arms and his legs and everything stuck into, because seeing him in full flow is one of rock music's greatest sights, I think.
Excellent stuff. David, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, chaps. Keep up the good work.
Many thanks to David Prudden for joining us. Brilliant to hear from him. Next today, it's our scouting report. Right, Adrian, I'm excited about this one because you're doing a scouting report about a player who you've actually seen in the flesh. So, you know, if anybody's looking for a potential scout, this is the best way for you to showcase your work.
Yeah. No, well, look, when all the broadcasting work dries up, which it inevitably will, then the scouting might be all I have left. We'll have to wait and see. But yeah, look, Anis Mehmeti, I saw him in the flesh. I was excited to see him. Obviously, the young Albanian player, he's only 21 for Wickham Wanderers. He scored 5 goals this season and he'd scored 5 largely brilliant individual goals as well. It was a difficult day for him against Sheffield Wednesday because he was playing for a team that weren't really at it. But he created the moment of the match. And I think it might be one of the best assists I've seen in the flesh for a long, long time. He's by the byline and he produces an incredible drag back flick turn. And then he wriggles past 2 or 3 defenders and somehow cuts the ball back for Sam Vokes at a seemingly impossible angle. It was sensation. It was Messi-esque play from Mehmeti. And I think that is what he provides Wickham. He provides the moments. Because for the rest of the game, it wasn't really that good. He was quite frustrating. Lots of quick feet, box of tricks, puts defenders in difficult situations. But the final decision was wayward on a number of occasions. But I don't want to knock him down because he's got the ability to win matches for Wickham. And, you know, his 5 goals have all been solo efforts. You look at the stats, he's had more chance creating ball carries than anyone else in the division. He scored from 2 of them himself. So here, he's a moments player at the moment, but moments players are still very, very valuable. And I think they are to Wickham, particularly at the moment. And he loves a shot, by the way. He's averaging pretty much 4 shots per 90, which is some going for a winger. But he won't really cross the ball. He won't create loads of chances, but he will every now and again beat 3 players and stick one in the corner. And he's an exciting player and the sort of player that fans, you know, want to turn out and see. The one quirk is every goal and the assist all came in the first half. He'd done nothing in the second half at any stage this season. So he might want to try and turn it on after half time, otherwise he'll be getting the hook from Gareth Ainsworth on the hour mark, as most wingers do.
Wickham Twitter admin, if you want to use hashtag Mehmeti at any point, I think we'll be more than happy to give that over to you. Sam, I'm interested in your choice of study this week. It's Josh Johnson, but broadly Oxford's youngsters. Now, I've got Carl Robinson as a man who might be under a bit of pressure, but I guess his development of youth players is one of the things that makes him attractive to club owners.
Yeah, I wanted to go more obscure than Aaron Henry, who played about 12 minutes, hadn't he, in League One. So this chap has not even made his League One bow yet, Johnson. I saw him against Crystal Palace, and I didn't want it to pass me by because they were really impressive in the Carabao Cup around about a month or so ago. A plethora of young lads that given an opportunity in that game and around that time. James Gordon's a right wing back. He played in the subsequent league game. Gaitland O'Donker, 17-year-old forward, he played. Someone a little bit more established is Tyler Goodrum. He's already scored his first goal, a forward player against Cambridge. So there's a few of them around the first team squad. But Johnson, problem position for Oxford, centre of midfield. enforcer, defensively minded. He was brilliant up against the Palace side midfield that had Milivojevic, Will Hughes, Jeffrey Schlupp at various times in the games. This lad only just turned 18, only just signed his first professional contract. Carl's talked him up loads. Some of the natives I spoke to, not so sure if he's going to be the one, but I think he's been catapulted right into the forefront of their minds because of this performance. Ran the midfield, most interceptions. Obviously, I'm scratching around a little bit to find some stats on him. So I've only got this game. Didn't lose possession, three successful tackles, and gave Oxford that balance to allow Bate and Branigan to go and perform. So keep an eye out. I would be very surprised if Carl doesn't give him a few more minutes because he was outstanding.
There you go. Listen to a couple of players to impress your mates with next time you're talking about young EFL stars of the future. Next today, we're going to look ahead to some of the weekend's key clashes. So the Championship is back this weekend. Sunderland versus Preston is the game we've got our collective eye on. It's fifth versus 15th. Clarky, we mentioned this last week. Tony Mowbray's had a decent start as Black Cats boss. Feels like this might be one of those managerial changes that actually ends up suiting everybody.
Why not? Yeah, I think so. I'm a big fan of Tony Mowbray's work. I like him as a man, but also I like watching his teams play. I think they play a good brand of football. And yeah, it seems a decent fit. Really does. I just really like their attacking mentality. It's easy to come up a division and think, okay, you know, we'll be a little bit more cautious and set up in a slightly more defensive structure. But that's not been the case with Sunderland this season. They've gone for it. You know, 14 joint leading mark alongside Bristol City. So, and they're up against the team with the lowest in Preston. They've only got two. So, yeah, it'll be an interesting game, this one. But, I like the way Sunderland are going. And as we talked about in a previous show, these young players that they signed that we didn't know very much about do look talented. The Costa Rican player, Juison Benete, scored twice for Costa Rica this week against South Korea. So he's absolutely flying right now.
I'm sure Ryan Lowe's just spent the international break getting Preston doing shooting drills. In League One, it's MK Dons versus Peterborough. A tasty tussle, this one. Much needed weekend win for Posh after four defeats on the spin. Sam, maybe a little bit over-reliant on Johnson, Clark, Harris?
No, I don't think so. He is where we all expected him to be. Top of the charts, seven goals. I thought it was really interesting. They played Spurs in the, what's it called now? The Papa John's Trophy last week. And it was a first team. He played a first team. And that's what managers do. If you're toiling, having a difficult time, get the big hitters out there. Not as a punishment as such, but just to get a bit of confidence, get a little bit of rhythm. And they won handsomely in that game. And they obviously beat Port Vale very comfortably at the weekend. 23 shots to 9, 2-0 up at halftime, job done. But yeah, Clark Harris, top goal scorer. I think Marriott has had the most shots per 90, Ward's the most assists in the league. Not surprised by any of this. And if you contrast it with the way MK Dons are playing, and the stats that back it up, really surprised at their start to the season. A lot of people probably would have had the pair of these two in automatic positions. They are bottom for expected goals, MK Dons. And when you think of the personnel I've just spoken of at Posh, Matthew Dennis leading the line for MK Dons, an Arsenal youngster. Clarkie may know him, but I mean, they haven't got anywhere near the threat that they had last season. And I know it's simplistic, but if you take the best players out of any side and they're not replaced properly, and this isn't a criticism, this is fact, then it may take a little bit of time for Liam Manning to get them going again this year. And I don't think they're going to challenge, but I don't think it's going to be a year where they're looking over their shoulders as such.
Yeah, I agree. They just lost too many good players in forward areas, and it's not, they've not been replaced. To be honest, defensively, not amazing either. Then they've faced the third highest number of shots. It's averaging pretty much 15 shots per game that they're facing at the other end of the pitch. So a lot for Liam Manning to work on. I just hope, unlike Watford, that MK Dons will look at the bigger picture and realise what they've got, and that basically he needs the kind of players that will work well with the style of football that he produces.
And meanwhile, in League Two, it's going to be Stockport County versus Walsall at Edgeley Park. Only a point and a place between them in the bottom half. Clarke, who's had the most underwhelming start to the season? Stockport, only two league wins. They've just come up, but you know, they were heavily tipped by everybody. Walsall haven't won in any competition since the 9th of August.
Yeah, it's a long time, isn't it? I think Walsall probably have had the worst start. Obviously, with Mike Flynn, high-profile manager at this level.
In that, next big thing, wasn't he, a couple of years ago?
Exactly. And during that winless run, they've only scored 5 goals. What I will say is that all of their losses have been by 1 goal, max. So they've been on the wrong end of some really tight games. So they haven't crumbled. It's not been an embarrassment. They just haven't, you know, been ruthless enough when chances have come their way. With Stockport, I think this will be a low-scoring game. You look at Stockport's home record, only conceded 2 in their 4 games at home since they lost 3-2 on the opening day. So they're really tightened up on their own patch. Not the same on the road, it has to be said, where they've been a bit leaky. So, yeah, I think Stockport might nick this one, but it'd be a very low-scoring game, I'd imagine.
This is almost must-win territory for Mike Flynn, I would say. And I've got a lot of time for him. I like him. And I think he'll come good again. I'm not sure about the type of players they've brought in. I mean, it's the type of basket you're shopping in, isn't it, really, for Walsall? I'm sure he would have had some targets they weren't able to get, but the creativity is severely lacking. Clarkie touched on that. 6 goals in 9. They beat Hartlepool 4-0 on the opening day.
Yeah.
They've not scored multiple goals in any game. So that is pretty desperate. And you look at Danny Johnson, who's been a brilliant goal scorer in streaks. He's like so streaky. I think he's 1 in 6 at the moment. So we know that from the last few years. He can go on at the moment. He's struggling individually and collectively really bad. So this one goes sour. There's going to be big pressure on him.
Right, we're just about done for this week, but you know we're going to end with Tweet of the Week. It's become tradition for us. It's a rather complex and convoluted tale this week. It all started with Mansfield's Kellen Gordon tweeting after the Stags' dramatic and late come-from-behind win at Crewe. Yeah, atmosphere was a vibe. Love it, yellows. At Mansfield Town FC, 2 lightning emojis, all fairly standard stuff. But it drew an angry response from Crewe fan Phil B, who tweeted, 4 stands, ? Proper academy, brackets, cat2-million-a-year, ... close brackets, ? Never, all caps, brackets, and never will be, close brackets, non-league. Definitely one to tell the grandkids about, I suppose. Bless. To which the Mansfield official account quote tweeted using that clip from the in-betweeners of Will saying to his head of sixth form, thanks for that, Phil, because this guy was called Phil. I really like this, Sam. I like club admin getting involved to back up their player whilst making a troll look daft. Is this good use of club Twitter, or should they be staying out of this type of thing?
Stay out of it. It would have been good if Kellen Gordon had done that. Thanks for that, Phil. That would have been excellent.
That was a good, yeah.
Oh, you'd be pleased to know, Matt, that it's continued. The spat has continued with someone else from the Crewe persuasion getting involved today, and Mansfield have gone back heavy handed once more. So it is continuing into a third day or whatever. But no, that would have been magic if it was Kellen Gordon. But I'm not so sure about the admin. I'm just a bit Victor Melger in it when it comes to tweeting. And over the last 7 days, I've been taking a hard look at myself. So
you got to rise above it, I think. If you're the club account, you got to be above this kind of thing. But I know it is enjoyable to a degree. But where do you draw the line?
I've just looked at Mansfield's retort, and yeah, you're right. It's gone too far, hasn't it? They've mocked up a score graphic. Crewe 3, Mansfield 2. So they've kept the Mansfield goal scorers and the Crewe goal scorer, but they've added handball in the build-up to goals 90+7, and Jonty from Crewe says we paid the ref 90+8. So it is delightfully petty.
I quite like that. I quite like today's. Today's beef has stepped up for me.
You and more than 8,700 people like it. So done, admin. At least you've got some views towards your way. Maybe it could go toward helping the energy bill in some way, as we talked about earlier. That's going to wrap things up for us today. What a treat it was to have David Pritton join us for the Fit and Proper guest test. We forgot to ask him if he passed, but you know, that's just a convention, isn't it? We're never going to say to somebody who takes time out of their day to come and talk to us, you failed. It would just be rude. Give us a follow on Twitter at EFL What The, if you'd be so kind. If you want to sponsor the pod, then drop us an email, whattheefl@yahoo.com. If you can, you know, follow, subscribe, rate, like, all that good stuff. Tell your pals, that would help us keep making these podcasts for you. We'll be back with another one next week. Until then, enjoy the football. We'll speak to you soon. Bye for now.